Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, August 16th, 2019 edition of the News Gazette. And we'll begin on the front page with a piece about the iHotel and Conference Center called Expansion Would Add Exhibit Hall, Meeting Rooms. Vote allowing new ground lease to be signed expected at Monday meeting by Ben Zigerman, Champaign. The University of Illinois is planning to expand its conference center at the iHotel, possibly adding more than 16,000 square feet of meeting space to the 11-year-old building. Construction could begin next month and end in September 2020, according to a timeline included in materials for this coming Monday's meeting at the UI Research Park LLC board. At that meeting, the board is expected to vote on allowing its chairman to sign a new ground lease between the Research Park and Fox Atkins Development, which manages the conference center. The conference center expansion will be delivered by utilizing the existing development agreement between the University of Illinois Research Park, LLC, and Fox Atkins Development, according to the meeting materials. The expansion would include a 14,500-square-foot exhibit hall that can be subdivided into six sections, according to blueprints in the meeting packet. It would also have two meeting rooms, a conference room, and a staging kitchen. The expansion would be built off the southeast corner of the existing 38,000-square-foot conference center, and the exterior would have a similar look. I think it's pretty clear that the demand warrants the expansion and has for several years, developer Peter Fox said, declining to comment further. The conference center loses out on 15 to 20 events a year that would draw more than 600 people, according to Fox Development Corporation, documents previously given to the News Gazette Media. The iHotel and Conference Center opened in 2008, just south of the State Farm Center, and last year, Fox said, it has been successful. Unlike the five-story, 125-room hotel, the Conference Center is owned by the University of Illinois, and in its first 10 years, Fox Atkins has returned an operating profit to the UI of about $3 million, Fox said. The conference center cost the UI $11.6 million to build, according to News Gazette Archives. It's unclear how much the expansion would cost and who would pay for it. Research Park Director Laura Frerix referred News Gazette Media to UI's Auxiliary Services Office, which did not return a request for comment. According to the meeting documents, 223 parking spaces would be added, while 80 would be removed to make space for the expansion. The parking construction would begin in September, with the building construction beginning in January, and a certificate of occupancy could be received, possibly, by September 30, 2020. And next, a piece about health advice. Parents, tell your kids. Vaping isn't harmless. Several cases of respiratory illness being investigated for link to trend by Deborah Pressey, Champaign. It's popular, easy to conceal, and available in fruit and dessert flavors. But parents be warned, vaping isn't the harmless practice many kids and teens think it is, said Matthew Quinn, Community Relations Coordinator with the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Treatment Agency, Rosecrans. The term vaping itself is so misleading because it makes kids think of vapor, he said. Vaping is more like breathing in aerosol than vapor, Quinn said. And it can deliver not only a powerful punch of addictive nicotine, but such chemical ingredients as formaldehyde, heavy metals, and the solvent propylene glycol. 1 5% strength Juul pod alone is designed to replace the nicotine strength of a full pack of cigarettes, according to the manufacturer's website. Quinn said he has seen declining memory and school performance, as well as other signs of brain function effects in kids and teens who vape. Though, he also said, I'd say the lungs get hit just as hard. A lot of kids are jumping into this blindly, he said. Vaping has risen dramatically in a single year alone, with about 37% of high school seniors reporting they had vaped at least sometime in the past 12 months, compared to about 28% the previous year, according to a government-funded survey done by the University of Michigan and published last year. Quinn blames the rising popularity of vaping on youth-targeted marketing and how easy vaping is for kids and teens to conceal. A Juul looks just like a flash drive and can be charged on a computer. It's so small, kids can just tuck it into their sleeves, he said. Vaping also doesn't produce a big cloud of smoke, Quinn said. It's very discreet, he said. Kids just blow them down their sleeves. Dozens of young people who reported vaping have been hospitalized recently for respiratory distress. Those cases are still being investigated, but the Office of the Surgeon General has already warned that vaping poses a significant health risk to young people, including a higher risk for both addiction and long-term harm to brain development and lung health. Quinn considers the big elephant in the room in Illinois to be the legalization of recreational marijuana come January 1st, combined with the growing popularity of marijuana vaping. While the age limit of 21 to buy both tobacco and marijuana products in the state may be a deterrent to law-abiding kids, there are still plenty of others who will be able to access their parents' supply of marijuana or buy it illegally, Quinn said. There's just going to be more of it out there, he said. Keep in mind that 80% of kids who experiment with alcohol get liquor from their parents' unsecured supply or those of their friends' parents, Quinn said. It's critical that parents be aware that today's marijuana is 7 to 10 times more potent than the pot that was around when they were younger, he said. Think of the potential issues that are going to come up with that. Kids who are going to get hooked on it because it's so much stronger, he said. More advice to parents from Quinn. It's not necessarily going to be obvious if your kids are vaping, so trust your gut when it's telling you something is wrong. Don't be afraid to check your kids' rooms and phones for signs that they are vaping. Along the same lines, be aware of how your kids are spending their pocket money. Parents these days are a little caught up in their kids' privacy, Quinn said. Be aware that some kids start vaping because they feel socially inadequate and want to fit in, so finding ways to build them up may help. But there's no one-size-fits-all solution, and for some kids it takes guidelines, accountability, and some consequences. Be prepared for a challenge if you want to help your kids quit vaping. The same interventions that help people quit smoking can help with quitting nicotine vaping, but motivation counts in kicking the habit, and your kid may not want to quit. And vaping and your kids? While Juul e-cigarettes contain a high level of nicotine, about 2/3 of Juul users ages 15 to 24 don't know that Juul always contains nicotine, according to a Surgeon General's advisory. Marijuana vaping grew among high school seniors from 9.5% to about 13% in a single year, says a December 2018 University of Michigan report. The use of nicotine in adolescents can cause harm to areas of the brain that control attention, learning, mood, and impulse control, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And next, a piece about Dr. Howard's school. See you tomorrow in a year. Project on target despite wet spring roadwork by Anthony Zillis, Champaign. As kids flooded into Dr. Howard Elementary School, currently housed at Columbia School just north of downtown Champaign, for the first day of school Thursday, the future Dr. Howard along University Avenue continued to take shape. The basic structure of the building can now be seen in the form of steel beams protruding from the foundation. And although work went slowly this past spring due to wet weather, the builders have been catching up and are on target for a June 15th completion date. Where we were at during the spring at Dr. Howard was compacting the grade and completing site utility work and pouring foundations, Unit 4 Capital Projects Manager Sandra Ressler said. All three of those things were really weather dependent, so we were slowed down in the spring. I just talked to the contractor yesterday, and they were able to make up some time that we lost in pouring foundations and on the steel framing. The steel framing is actually going in slightly better than we expected, so we're looking really good. That completion date is vital for the district-wide construction project because Edison's sixth graders will be moving temporarily to Columbia School next year to make way for renovations at the middle school. We planned for an early substantial completion date at Dr. Howard to make sure we had plenty of time to locate staff from the Columbia building and make adjustments at Columbia so that Edison work can begin as planned, Ressler said. Dr. Howard is the first completely new building the district has erected since Carrie Busey was finished in 2012, 1 year after the new Booker T. Washington was finished. Unlike other Unit 4 referendum projects, Dr. Howard started with a clean slate after the rubble of the old building was cleared. That has helped progress speed along. The team at Dr. Howard can make decisions independent of how it affects the school schedule, and that's a tremendous advantage, Ressler said. One complication has been reconstruction work on streets surrounding the school, which are being gutted to improve stormwater management. With city streets being worked on, we really have to be careful about what size of equipment we're bringing in onto the site and coordinating deliveries of large pieces of equipment like precast panels, steel framing, that had to be coordinated with the city to make sure that we could progress without delays, Ressler said. Both teams are looking at logistics with each other's projects in mind. The next phase of the project will include the completion of steel beam installation and the pouring of concrete on the second building's second floor. Meanwhile, Dr. Howard has begun school at its temporary Columbia Digs, which Ressler thinks the staff has adapted well to while waiting excitedly for a brand new building next summer. And now, in the opinions page, we'll begin with an editorial called Run, Jesse, Run. Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White isn't going anywhere, not now, and maybe not again in 2022. Fresh from his re-election to a sixth term in 2018 as Illinois Secretary of State, Jesse White made the absolutely unsurprising announcement this week that he won't seek a seventh in 3 years from now. "This is my last tour of duty," he told reporters at the Illinois State Fair. Given that White routinely says he won't run for re-election and then subsequently announces that he's a candidate for re-election, his campaign team would be wise not to throw away their re-elect White bumper stickers. It's no secret that White is getting a little long in the tooth. At 85, he's even older than 77-year-old Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. But he's a physical wonder, and like Madigan, White just keeps rolling along. He's energized by not only being Secretary of State, but managing his tumbling team. White's athletes, who have put on great halftime shows at the State Farm Center, perform widely, both inside and outside the U.S. Given that White's term isn't up for another 3 years, it might seem premature to some that he's even talking about his next election. But in a state like Illinois, where politics always trump policy, the polls scheme 24/7 about their future prospects. That's why the other announcement White made was even more important. He said he has no intention of leaving office early, a move that would follow Governor J.B. Pritzker to name his replacement. Well, it would allow Governor Pritzker to name his replacement. There are a slew of Democratic politicians who drool in anticipation over the idea of succeeding White in a patronage-rich office that offers a high-level public platform and requires little or no work by the top man. Aspirants include Comptroller Susana Mendoza and Treasurer Michael Frerichs, to name just two. They know the political value of that post. For those who don't, here are two examples. Jim Edgar was a lowly former member of the Illinois House of Representatives when he was tapped in 1981 to fill the vacancy created by then-Secretary of State Alan Dixon's election to the U.S. Senate. Edgar used that post to get out and about, establishing himself as a credible candidate for election as governor in 1990. Then there's George Ryan, another former Secretary of State who became the state's governor. The Secretary of State's office may be purely administrative, to the point that it runs itself. But it's politically potent, and everyone who aspires to keep moving up the ladder knows it. So when White says he's not going anywhere, it's deflating to those who wish to succeed him, especially by way of a gubernatorial appointment. To their way of thinking, he's blocking the upward mobility of ambitious Democrats who would like to use lower-level statewide offices as a vehicle to run for higher-level statewide offices like governor and the U.S. Senate. It took years for former Attorney General Lisa Madigan to get out of the way, so when she announced that she wouldn't seek another term as Attorney General, a slew of Democrats rejoiced and then filed papers to run for her spot. White has proved to be even more intransigent, as he has run for re-election and then pledged not to run again for re-election and then pledged not to run again. This is at least the third time White has promised to call it a day. There's no more reason to believe him now than there was then. And we'll look now at the From Our Readers section, and we'll read a piece by Jennifer Roth of Urbana called Let's Keep Moving Forward on Values. A recent letter writer wants to take us back to the family values of the 1950s, when morality and respect for others ruled the day. That simpler time when, if you were black, you had to worry about whether you were putting your family's lives at risk by registering to vote or living in the wrong town, including some towns right here in central Illinois. If you were a woman, you could be legally prohibited from accessing birth control, and your husband could legally rape you. If you were gay or lesbian, you were expected to stay in the closet, which, among other things, resulted in doomed marriages as people tried to live the lives that were expected of them rather than the ones that were true. The 1950s, like all eras, had aspects we can learn from, but idealizing the values of those days requires ignoring all the people who were hurt and excluded. Let's cultivate real family and civic values by all means. Responsibility, caring for others, treating everyone like the valuable human beings that they are. We're certainly not there yet, but we won't get there by going backward. And that again was written by Jennifer Roth of Urbana. And we'll turn now to the sports page and begin with a piece from Illinois Volleyball. UI setter spot gets new look. Allison Brown may share role by Scott Ritchie, Champaign. Jordan Poulter casts a rather lengthy shadow on the Illinois volleyball program. The Aurora, Colorado native finished her career third all-time in program history with 5,156 assists, and the 2018 AVCA first-team All-American and Big Ten Setter of the Year was the only Illini setter ever to also top 400 blocks and 1,000 digs in a career. Currently standing in that shadow, sophomore Micah Allison and redshirt freshman Diana Brown. One of them, maybe both, depending on Coach Chris Tamas's decision, will replace Poulter in the Illini lineup ahead of the team's season opener on August 30th at Tennessee. But Tamas doesn't want either Allison or Brown to be Poulter. Neither does Poulter. I think that whatever ends up happening with the setting position, if they share it, then they're both going to make it kind of their own, Poulter said. I hope there's not a ton of comparison because every team is a new group and there's a new dynamic. I hope they really just own whatever they're going to bring to the team on the court. I think that's an important part of the team's success this season. I'm excited to see what they do. Brown learned from Poulter every day throughout the 2018 season during her redshirt season. The six-footer out of Columbus, Ohio, considers Poulter a role model. But a lot of times, Chris says to me, "You're not Jordan Poulter. We need you to be Diana Brown." Brown said, "I think that really helps me. She did have a very, very great career here, and she'll go down in history, but I'm hoping to make my own impact." Which setter will move into the rotation is still to be determined. It could still be both. Tamas ran a 6-2 offense with Brown and Allison during Illinois' spring season. His directive to both has been, do what you do best. From my standpoint, I teach a lot to a system, Tamas said. We want to make sure they're good with that system of play. They're both learning new things. That's just part of being at Illinois. A lot of the work came over the summer. We gave them a sheet. Here's stuff you need to work on. And away they went. Jordan was Jordan. That's about it. A great player, but now we've got two other great setters in the gym to battle it out every day. We'll see who wins the job, or if it's two of them, or any combination of what we can do. The job is to win the rally and win the point. You try to do that for six rotations. However we can construct the six rotations to make sense, then that's the way we do it. Allison made it a competition this spring after transferring from Auburn. The St. Thomas More graduate earned SEC All-Freshman Team Honors in 2018 after starting every match for the Tigers. Allison brings the on-court experience. Her serve is great, Brown said. I'm very jealous that she's left-handed. She makes tricky sets look good. She's just an all-round good volleyball player. Brown can counter with better insight into Illinois' system, giving her full year working with Tamas and Poulter. Communication, Allison said, was Brown's biggest strength. She's really good at figuring out what someone wants, and she'll do her best to do that. We know that we're pushing each other to be better. Ultimately, that's what's going to be best for the team. It's fun to come in the gym and have some competition every single day and get after it. What Tamas has this preseason is options, and in some ways, similar ones. Both Brown and Allison were AVCA Under Armour All-Americans in high school and top 50 recruits in the 2018 class, with Brown ranked 45th and Allison 7th. They both also got some international experience this summer with USA Volleyball, with Brown playing in Italy in the World University Games and Allison in Japan alongside Illini teammate Jacqueline Quaid. They both do phenomenal things, Tamas said. They wouldn't be here if they didn't. They both have USA experience. Just excited to have them compete in the gym. They work hard and get after it. It's tough to make any separation right now. We ask them to compete and we ask them to get better, and that's what they're doing. And next we have, in the local pages, a piece on a court report, Man Arraigned for Alleged Sexual Assault, by Mary Shank, Urbana. A Champaign man was arraigned Thursday on criminal charges alleging he sexually assaulted a woman he knew at a party more than a year ago in Urbana. Ramon Forrest, 30, who listed an address in the 400 block of Ginger Bend Drive, was arrested early Thursday on a warrant issued last week by Judge John Kennedy, who found probable cause existed to arrest Forrest on charges of criminal sexual assault and attempted criminal sexual assault. State's Attorney Julia Reitz said the charges stemmed from an alleged activity at a January 2018 party on Kerr Avenue in Urbana. Reitz said that co-workers were in attendance on January 29, 2018, and that the woman, 20, of Urbana, reported she fell asleep on a couch, only to be awakened by Forrest allegedly trying to penetrate her. She told Urbana police that Forrest allegedly grabbed her arm and held it behind her. She said she was able to get away from him and go into a bedroom. The woman reported the attack to police on February 1, 2018. A detective interviewed Forrest, who denied any inappropriate activity, Reitz said. Samples taken from the woman were sent to the Illinois State Crime Lab for DNA analysis, Reitz said, and came back in June of this year, suggesting that Forrest had contact with the woman and leading to the charges that were filed August 9th. Forrest was arraigned Thursday by Kennedy, who ordered him to have no contact with the alleged victim. Forrest asked for a probable cause hearing, which was set for August 29th. He was being held in the Champaign County Jail in lieu of $50,000 bond. And we'll turn now to the history section. In area history, in 1919, the Farm Bureau announced it would hold its annual picnic, September 25th, on the Harris Farm south of Mahomet. Boy Scouts from Champaign and Urbana were expected to provide with 25 minutes of stunts at the event. In 1969, the village of Mansfield began preparations to celebrate its 100th birthday on January 1, 1970. The village was formed in 1890 by Brigadier General John Lutz Mansfield, a Civil War veteran and German immigrant who established a 1,000-acre farm and built a house there. In 2004, the Champaign Park District's Prairie Farm welcomed its newest animal, Buffy the Buffalo. Park District General Manager Bobby Hurakovich said it was the first time Champaign's rural-themed zoo had ever had a buffalo. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, August 16th, 2019 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.